Shop the Sherwin-Williams Spring Sale and get 35% off paints and stains March 13th through the 23rd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for watching the podcast. I'm going to Orlando February 13th. I'm going to Tampa February 14th. That's Valentine's Day. And then February 28th, coming to Buffalo, New York. DanSoder.com for those tickets. Go get tickets now. There are seats left, but a few seats left. Also, if you live in Boston, we added a late show. DanSoder.com for those tickets. Man, I'm very excited to get back on the road. See you soon. See you very soon. Thanks for watching the podcast. Thanks for following along. Even if you're hate watching this, hey, thanks for hating. I love you too.
What's crazy is out of all the Red Rock shows I've done, and there have been...
You did four?
Four, yeah.
That's fucking sick, dude.
I know.
Four Red Rock shows is someone that grew up in Colorado.
Yeah.
It's fucking sick.
The last one was my favorite. Because I didn't...
That was this year, right?
Yeah. That was my favorite because I think I had more material prepared.
Sure.
And I had my hour was further along.
Yeah.
Every other time, I feel like my hour just started and I did Red Rocks. It was because it's always at the beginning of routing. Routing always starts in September, August, September. And I'd always, because of the weather, you got to do it September, October.
Yeah, because I used to go there for Easter service. Like,
for real?
You could go to Red Rocks and watch the sunrise, and they do Easter service. My mom was raised Catholic, so that was like her thing that she wanted to do. Hated it as a child, because you have to wake up at like 4 in the morning.
Oh, yeah, to get to Red Rocks.
To get to Red Rocks from Aurora, and then sit in the freezing cold, and then they're just talking about Jesus while the sun comes up, and all these old people that have done drugs and fucked without condoms are going like, oh, a new day rises. But little me is like, yo, this shit sucks. So going back with you.
Yeah, that was okay. So out of all my Red Rocks appearances, I have moments that I never forget, right?
Yeah.
So the first one was they said, hey, are you going to be like Sebastian or do you want to hang out? And I was like, what? And like Sebastian does Red Rocks and he just leaves.
I take a jetpack out of there.
Yeah, well, because you either get off stage, they escort you to a car, and you leave before the fans.
Well, because that have never been to Red Rocks, Colorado, getting there is it's a switchback.
Yeah,
you just got to keep going back and forth because you're going up a fucking small little mountain. I don't even know if you call it a mountain.
And they're like, or you can stay,
which is such a cool venue to hang.
But you got to hang out until like 1 a.m. And I was like, oh, I'm fucking hanging.
And do you know who I am?
Yeah. And
oh, hey.
That night, I went out to the stage by myself. I did Red Rocks for the first time. I had a vodka soda and a big glass, and I had a joint, and I just sat out there by myself on the stage, and I was like, it was like I can't believe I achieved this. The next year was with Norman and Gillis.
Yeah.
And we stayed. That first one was for Jimmy Buffett. And I met Jimmy Buffett, talked to Jimmy Buffett.
He is a Florida guy, too.
100%. Like, one of my heroes. If you talk branding, like of comedy, like, if you could give a brand to me, I would love that Jimmy Buffett brand of, like, beach, chill, fucking relax, fucking boats. Like, that's my thing. It's not who I am, really.
Do you know my Jimmy Buffett story?
No.
I could tell it now, because he's dead. Yeah. There's no fucking legal thing. When I did my HBO special, I had a long joke about my dad died of alcoholism, but he was a Jimmy Buffett fan, so it was fun. That was the whole point. It was like, my dad died of drinking, but he's a parrot head, so it was a fucking blast.
Yeah.
So I can't cry about it.
Yeah.
So I had a whole joke, and the joke was like, I had a joke about my friends losing their parents in 9/11, and like, it was a joke about Pete Davidson's dad, about his dad was a firefighter, and he was like, I need to save those people. And my dad's last words were, I like mine with little centimeter. So I did this. Cypher Sounds was DJing my taping at the Bowery Ballroom. This is 2019 for my HBO special. At the end of my set, he's just fucking DJing. I didn't tell Cypher to do anything. I was like, you're one of the greatest DJs of all time. You just let it rip. He finishes the first show and he fucking hits Margaritaville as I'm going off stage. My mom, everybody that I know, but my mom, especially when I saw her, she was like, you have to close with Margaritaville.
Yeah.
She was like, the way it hits after that joke, it's such like, it's an extra punchline. Yeah. It's like the joke hit. So I was like, yeah, you're right. So I asked HBO. I was like, I would love Margaritaville. And they...
This on the special that you shot at the Trocadero?
No. That was Comedy Central.
Okay.
This was at the one at the Bowery Ballroom for HBO. And so I asked them, I go, can you get Margaritaville? And they were like, no. It's $150,000 to license that song. And I was like, okay, we're not doing Margaritaville. I go to town. Nate was doing town. This is how long ago it was. Nate was doing town hall. The guy's
one show.
Yeah, the guy's, Nate's doing Six on the Moon next month. They're cratering out the moon. So Nate can do. Nate goes, I never done it in zero gravity, but I know cussing doesn't go well up here. So I go to town. Actually, you know what's funny? Nate was doing two at town hall. He was doing two. Everyone else does one. Nate was doing two, and I went and was just hanging out. Katie and I are hanging out with Nate backstage. And I tell him, he's asking me about the HBO special. And he goes, you got it locked? And I was like, yeah, we're trying to get Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville, but it costs too much. And then Nate, you know, and this, I've watched it with you. When your friends get famous, they're all of a sudden friends with people that you didn't think, like Shane's friends with Christian McCaffrey in a way that I go, I'm nervous about this playoff game. And he goes, oh, I just played checkers against him this morning while he was on the training table. And you go, that's an insane, I never thought I would even be that close. So Nate went, oh, I'm friends with Jimmy Buffett's, like, one of his best friends. Do you want me to ask him? And I was like, that would be incredible. And he's like, great. And sometimes those situations, you go, they're never going to reach back out. Nate reaches out and he's like, hey, buddy, guy wants to send this guy an email and send him the clip of the joke from the special. And he's going to send it to Jimmy. And I was like, this is incredible. So I was full on book report voice. I write an email. It's like, Mr. Buffett, I've grown up hanging out in bars and listening to your music.
Mr. Buffet.
You are delicious. I would like another spoonful, please. But I wrote this like article, this email about how me and my dad would listen to his music while we were going to open the liquor store that my dad worked at, or when he was bartending. Jimmy Buffett was always on. And then I send the clip. And then Nate... This is how funny Nate is. Nate goes, I'm just going to send you the texts I got. And Nate sends one text. It's pretty small. And it's like, hey, man, just read this guy's email. What a beautiful story. I love this connection he has to Jimmy through his dad. Let me ask Jimmy. Maybe there's a chance we can get this to work. And then there's a huge long text. And he goes, I just watched this bit. Absolutely not. There is no way. Jimmy doesn't want to be associated with alcoholism. And I went, motherfucker, you're going to be out here selling your own fucking tequila and all this shit. And then you go, but whoa, 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 drink responsibly. And you go, come on, dude.
Yeah.
I wanted him at least to go, hey, I can't, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't want him to go, oh, I have nothing to do with that. And you're like, you're the Pied Piper of cirrhosis.
He was the guy. I mean,
he was like, the guy.
He was the guy.
Big J and I, when we first started the Bonfire, we went to a Huey Lewis in the News opening for Jimmy Buffett. I'm a huge Huey Lewis in the News guy.
Everyone should be.
Everyone should be. Listen to Sports, the album.
Listen to American Psycho.
Listen to, I mean, front to back, Sports is an unbeatable album. DeRosa and I have argued against people.
There's so many facts about Huey Lewis that I have learned over the years that I'm not remembering.
Do you know about his giant penis?
There we go.
Okay. Well, and I'm with Jay, the penis whisperer.
Yeah.
And we're at the show, and we know this. We talked about it on the Bonfire. We brought up the clip of the woman on Stern saying that he had the biggest penis she had ever been with. We're on stage. We saw it through his jeans. Big J, it was like one of those things where Jay's hitting me, and he goes, dude, he goes, left, and you just see it sitting there, and you're like, that is, can I tell you what? It made me go, no one would want a dick that big.
No. Can we take a step back and go, I want to go back to a world where Jimmy Buffett and Huey Lewis in the News were our icons.
Yeah.
Like, because life was simpler back then.
It was fun. It was like throw on sunglasses and go, the weekend's here.
Yeah, and every uncle Let's had bring a back personality.
Garfield. That's our holy trio.
Yeah.
Huey, Jimmy, and Garfield.
Dude, it was so easy. Life was so easy back then.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we have too many media outlets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have too much coming at us to, and it's so much to like, and then so much to hate. I was telling was telling someone the other day, they're like, do you think you'll ever do another, or do you think you'll do another special after this one? And I was like, I don't know. When I did Secret Time,
yeah,
I remember, can I tell you, this is how few specials there were back then. They sent me your special that you shot at the Troc.
Yeah.
And they're like, Soder shot his at the Troc. There's only a couple places you could really shoot it. They're like, this is the stage he built out. And maybe that year there were like 75 specials released. When I released
Secret Time, remember the year in 2016 when I put it out, Comedy Central put out 7 specials total.
Netflix put out, when I did Secret Time, Netflix put out, I think, 40 specials.
Yeah.
40 specials. And that was a lot.
That was, and that was, I remember, a lot. That was 2018. 2018, you put out Secret Time. I think you filmed it 2017.
You're right.
It truly is one of the only things I'm pretty good at.
But now you look and you go, and no, there's no, I'm not saying like, oh, there's too many stores. What happened to the mom and pop shops? I'm just saying like, there's a lot of specials coming out, and I had a young comic on the bus. He's like, hey man, I'm getting ready to shoot my special. What advice do you have? And I go, don't shoot a special.
Yeah, hold it.
Yeah, hold it. Hold it. Let it get really, really good.
Yeah.
Like, let it get really, really, really good.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem. I'm gonna be very honest and say, I put out from 2018 to 2024-25, I put out like 6 specials.
That's a lot of work.
I think. I mean, I like Secret Time, Razzle Dazzle, Hey Big Boy, Lucky, and maybe 5 specials, maybe one more.
But that's in less than 6 years.
Yeah, and I stand by them. They're all good.
See, I would say I regret all of 2 specials.
All of 2 specials.
Yeah, I regret doing anything except the HBO special and my YouTube one that we put out in 2024.
YouTube one was fucking phenomenal.
Thanks, but those
YouTube one was. Hang on, YouTube one was fucking phenomenal, and I would say, the reason it was phenomenal is you were on this tear where it was like, you want, I'm saying this to younger comics, you want other comics to be talking about how good you're getting.
Yeah.
Like that is like the thing is like, I remember hearing Ari of all people whispering to someone about me.
Yeah.
And I remember overhearing it and going, and by the way, I think, I mean, in that group was like a wild group of comics. And he was like, no, if you're having a problem with story, you should go to Bert. Bert is one of the best storytellers.
I've heard Ari say that directly himself.
Yeah. And so, but you want that. And if people aren't saying that about you, hold off on your special.
Yeah.
And by the way, I got to be honest with you. People haven't said that about me in a while.
Well, you know what's funny about that is because I think we're in this different realm now where if you aren't putting out stuff consistently, people forget about you. And what sucks about that is, it's crazy you're bringing this up, because I had this exact fucking feeling this morning while I'm looking at my phone taking a dump, and I was like, oh yeah, the art of going away is gone. How excited, like when you announced your show, I knew you were filming it because we had been texting in Atlanta, so I knew what was going on. Also, you were on social media.
I was trying to get you on as the guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then we were texting about it, and then I knew you rapped or whatever, but then it kind of went away. The excitement I was when you were like, "Show's coming out," and you go like, "Oh shit, it's so fun." I think what has happened is behind the scenes has become front of this, like everyone.
Okay, this like, is a brilliant conversation. Well, so here's what happened. Money got in the way of everything.
Sure.
So,
because money went directly to us now. The motherfuckers in the middle aren't holding on to it. They're not holding back.
They used to tell us when we got put on timeout. Oh. I remember Rogan called me. I got offered the Man Show. They said, hey, we want you to do the Man Show, the people that own the rights.
I remember when they were rethinking about after the Stanhope Rogan one.
Yeah.
This was like 2015, 2016.
Maybe even earlier than that.
Sure.
And I got a call from Rogan, and he goes, hey, don't do it. And I said, why? He goes, it's not going to be good. It's never going to be as good as Jimmy and Adam. That's the truth.
Yeah.
And he goes, Stanhope and I tried, and you'll get put on TV timeout. Those were his exact words. And I was like, TV timeout? And he goes, I was on TV timeout for a while after that. And I was like, that's crazy. But then what happened is, I'll tell you specifically from my perspective.
Sure.
I did Travel Channel for all this time. I got maybe $7,000 an episode, I think. I don't remember really. I've never paid attention to money that way. But like, I'm making good money.
Yeah.
I had to travel for 2 weeks to make $14,000 to do 2 episodes. My first ad sales moment, I had $1,500 a read and I did 5 reads. And I remember doing the 5 reads, putting them in the episode. I edited it. I put it in. And in all my time, I went, wait, I just sat with a friend, with Joey Diaz, and I just made more money than I'm making on Travel Channel because I'm not paying agents, managers. And then all of a sudden, the money numbers came into me and I went, whoa. Now here's where it gets complicated. In order to do ad sales, you have to commit to every single week. You have to do an episode every week. That's how buyers buy.
And they also buy it and they throw that number at you. And this is, you know, behind the scenes of podcasting. You'll see where they go, we need 54 episodes. And you go, oh, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Because you go, that's weeks. Those are weeks. Now, granted, you're hanging out with your friend and you're filming it. But when people wonder why shit's getting stale right now.
It's because we are forced to put out something every week. Yeah. And if you're like me and you're a fucking idiot and you decided to have three podcasts, you're like, I got a cooking show, a Bertcast, and Two Bears.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, by the time I get to Tommy, I'm like, did I tell you about, have I told, and you're like, what the fuck am I talking about?
Yeah. And then he goes, you told me that story an hour ago. And you go, my brain's fucking fried.
Yeah. And then you have to say, and I know everyone goes, the big thing you hear is people go, how much money do you need?
Yeah.
Well, then you really have to ask yourself, how much money do I need? And do I want this podcast to be good or do I want to make money off of it?
Yeah.
And then that's the same thing. And by the way, I don't want to ever sound like the guy. I never want to talk negative about comedy in general or anything going on in comedy, because you forget how quickly those are your friends doing it.
Yeah.
You know, like I said something shitty about political comedy, guys are doing politics comedy or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I see Steve Byrne doing great political comedy and I'm like, oh, never mind. Why would I say that out loud, right?
Well, it's also like I've shit on crowd work.
Okay, let's talk about crowd work.
But then I watch Big J's specials.
Amazing.
And I go, oh.
Stavi, amazing. Yeah. Mark Norman, amazing. Sam Morrell, amazing. Nate Jackson, fucking incredible. Yeah. And then.
There are people that are just like, the way Stavi does it, you go, oh, this is fun. I don't do that. I can't do that. And that's okay. I think what happened when all the money came in is we all got mushed into the same ball. Yeah. And so now you go, I'm competing with this guy when you know you don't do the same thing as
nothing.
Him. So it drives you crazy. Hey, everybody, if you're listening to this, you know I love ZocDoc. Why? Because I worry too much about what's going on with my own body, and I need a professional. I need an adult to tell me it's all right. Also, sometimes you just have something happen, and you're like, damn, I don't have a doctor for that. Well, ZocDoc, free app and a website that helps you find and book high quality in-network doctors so you can find someone you love or someone that you need something to a specific problem. I promise you, if you have a problem, we're talking about specialists. And if you got insurance, in-network appointments with more than 150,000 providers across all 50 states. If you're looking for dermatology, dentistry, primary care, eye care, any of the 200 specialties offered on ZocDoc, you can easily search by specialty or symptom to build the care team that's right for you. I've been using this since before podcasts were a thing. Stop putting off doctor's appointments. Go to ZocDoc.com/Soder to find and instantly book a doctor that you love today. That's ZocDoc.com/Soder. ZocDoc.com/Soder. Thanks, ZocDoc, for sponsoring this message. Support for today's episode comes from Square, the system powering a lot of places you do business. You've heard me talk about it before, but I think if you run a small business, that's one of the scariest things in the world. I have no idea how you even start it. And if you're following through on that, screw talking to people on stage. That's way scarier because you're like, you have to find out about permits and taxes and all that stuff. But you can make it a little easier by using Square. Whether you're selling lattes, cutting hair, detailing cars, or running a design studio, Square helps you run your business without running yourself into the ground. And right now, listeners can get up to $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/soder. That's square.com/go/soder. Visit Square to get started, because the right tools make all the difference. If you're starting a business or running one that deserves better tools, Square helps you sell, manage, and grow without slowing down. Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/soder. That's square.com/go/soder. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today.
Oh yeah, and what happened with the crowd work kids is, and I just clumped them all in together, sure, is because there's a ton, and
They're just trying to hear her licking her ass. Sorry, I had to hit my dog.
Katie, stop.
She's like, someone's got to do it.
What happened is they're in this race to put out a clip a day.
That's where we're starting to see the burnout is I'm one of the only people that'll say COVID probably saved me because I was burning out.
Yeah.
I've watched you hit the brakes in a way in the past couple of years where I go, smart, he's doing it.
Leanne made me take a year and a half off of stand-up.
Yeah.
I took one because here's the deal, and this is really inside baseball, but you can watch the structure of my specials and see that the structure, while be it the story's different, the structure is somewhat similar. Sure. In that I got a crazy Isla story.
Yeah.
I got a sex story about Leanne. I got a black guy interaction. I got like, it's my thing, you know? Yeah.
Like when it happens in real life, you go, I just got my black guy interaction. And buddy, the black guy goes, excuse me?
All I have are black guy interactions right now. I have so many that are so fucking good that I might call this next special black guys.
Please call it black guy interaction. BGI.
But I took a year and a half off stand-up because I felt like as I was doing Lucky, thank God I did six shows.
Yeah.
Because had I done...
I remember that when you filmed it. That was when you filmed it in Tampa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had I done four shows, it would have been the same as all my specials.
Sure.
But I did six shows, and the last two shows, I changed it up. I told the story about putting down Priscilla, which I never was going to tell.
Yeah. Which was a great story. Yeah, and I was on the road with you for... Fully Loaded, and you were thinking about doing that. That was like way before you filmed the special, and I remember you had like trepidation of like, it's a fucking sad ass story. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, but that's a good thing about storytellers is they can pull you down and then bring you back up.
Yeah, well, but when I look at like taking time off, and thank God, wait, I did it. I didn't do it for stand-up. I did it a little bit for stand-up, but I did it because the girls went to college, sure. And Leanne and I needed to hang out together. We'd never lived in the same house together, like just us.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to Rogan about it and being like, I'm like, I feel like I need a reset. Dude, thank God I did that because I'm looking at this new hour going like, and I got the opportunity. And I think you can do too many things at one time.
Yeah, that's.
Do you remember my brain during Fully Loaded when I'm like promoting, trying to check ticket sales? Dude, I remember Jelly Roll coming in. I got
first roll. What I remember specifically is before you guys launched Por Osos.
Oh my
guys,
God.
I remember waking up on the tour bus and we had been up till like 3 smoking weed, watching YouTube videos. Me and Jay were showing you Butterscotch Swirl. We were showing you all our favorite videos. It was so, we were watching the live feed of Kensington in Philly. We were watching like people legitimately, you were DMing a trap rapper.
Oh yeah.
Where you were like, yo dude, I'm fucking watching you. And Jay and I were like, yeah. Jay's daughter, when we told Isabella that, she was like, yo, he's like an actual drug dealer. And then Bert goes, oh, I deleted all those DMs. He goes, I didn't like those. But I woke up to piss on the tour bus and you had your readers on going over like fucking graphs and shit on the phone with Tom. You were going like, all right, well, and then I was like, I remember grabbing, it was one of those things where you're like, I'm not hungover because I don't drink anymore, but I was like weed hungover. I was like a little confused. And I remember popping a zero sugar A&W and going, what are you doing? And you're like, I'm in the middle of a business meeting. And I drank the A&W and just went back to the bed. I was like, this is fucking crazy.
You can do too many things.
Yeah. You were a guy where when I came home, I went, I'm very lazy.
But I'm lazy too. I think I just got to the opportunity where I got to the place where opportunity was there. And I seized it as much as I could. And I was like, anything. I'll stay awake. I'll push. And the first canary in the mine was Birdcast. Was like, I started noticing that like views were down and I was like, and I wasn't really that into it.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I was only into it if a band showed up and like everyone else, I would be like I did the one I mean, like you're pretty important in my life in that the one I did with you when I came in and I was like, I'm not drinking, but I'll drink. If you're going to smoke, maybe I'll smoke. And you're like, hey, maybe just smoke and see if you, like, know that you can drink if you want, but just smoke and see if you can smoke.
That's fun as hell.
And then we had one of the best podcasts, but that's where my head was with that. And then I started looking at everything going, so I need to take time off from stand-up. I need to take off. And then especially if you're going to do a TV show, I was like, I need to take time off entirely and just focus on this TV show if I want it to be good.
Yeah. And I think you don't realize, And this is for people in the business or just anybody that likes comedy. I don't think you realize other guys are doing that. They're just not saying they're doing that.
Right.
Because I didn't know, you know, I went down to when Shane was doing season two of Tires, Katie and I would take the dog down there to his farmhouse or whatever. And he'd be like, yeah, I'm just doing this. And I was like, good. Because I think sometimes your friends can be strung out and you don't know they're strung out. You think they're just working really hard. And you go, oh, shit. But I remember before COVID, doing billions bonfire stand up. It was just, you're going, it. I loved it. I loved doing all of it. I mean, I loved the bonfire. To call it a job is unfair. It wasn't a job. I got to hang out with one of the funniest human beings ever walked the planet. Billions was such a cool thing at first that felt like a job by season seven that I went, I got to step away from this and stand up. So the reason that I think my YouTube special was so good was because I shut everything down and then I'm just going to do stand-up.
But that was the word on the street. Like, everyone was like, dude, have you seen Dan stand-up? And then everyone, that's the thing. It's like, I remember Joe telling me one time, we were back, it was just like, got to be like 2016, 17. And he was like, you need a Netflix special. I was like, that's not how that works.
Okay. I should also get good at Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I'm bow hunting.
That was in the same conversation, by the way. He's like, you have a problem with confrontation. You need to be in jiu-jitsu. And I was like, okay.
He really does feel like your uncle that comes in and checks you on shit where you go, I don't know. I'm afraid to do that. He goes, then get over it. Do the fear.
I'm terrified to tell him about my blood clots because I know Joe so well, and he's going to go from fun Joe to serious Joe and be like, hold on, how much testosterone are you on? Did you get vaccinated? How many times did you have COVID? Like, there's a list of things that are reasons for blood clots.
More than your doctor?
Yeah.
And you go, my doctor doesn't even have a questionnaire this big.
He's like a big brother that really gives a fuck about you.
Yeah. Would you, when you found out about the blood clots, is that a moment where you go, what exactly caused it? Because whenever I have a health problem, I immediately go, I don't want to change my life. What caused this?
No, so okay. I'm going to take it one step backwards to get there.
Sure.
So there's, obviously my lifestyle is out of control.
I don't think people, listen, you could follow Bird on social media. You can go to his shows. You can fucking meet the man a couple times. You have no fucking clue how this guy lives. It is impressive and to the point where you go, I think I have low T. I think I, like, you look at him and you go, I think I have energy zapping where I'm not getting done because Brendan Sagalow is about to go on the road with you.
Yeah.
And he's on the road with me and I love him to death. And I go, you're going to do stuff with Bert. And he goes, what do you mean? I go, you do stuff with me. We wake up, we get a coffee, we smoke a joint, we walk around the town, and then I see you at the show.
Yeah.
Bert, you're gonna like race cars. This is how I described Bert on the tour, and I meant this. You are if the little boy from Blank Check grew up. You are someone gave you a blank check, and they're like, go nuts. And you're like, we're gonna rent go-karts today. We would wake up on the bus, and you go, we got a whole amusement park for us. And you're like, what the fuck is this?
We took Ian Finance. We were in Utah, and I was like, hey, get up. And Ian's like, why? And I go, we're going VR flight suiting. Insane. It was so amazing.
Insane.
You put on the VR goggles, headsets, and you put on a flight suit, like a squirrel suit, and you jump out of the back of a plane, and you fly. They have a fan. I mean, when they open the door of the plane, cold air hits your face, and you're like, oh, and they're like, scoot over to the edge, and it is so real.
You've done skydiving.
Yeah.
It's so fun. Ugh. It's, you didn't like it?
I'm afraid of flying.
Are you really?
It is so terrifying.
That's where the clots came from. The fucking planes knew.
Planes. Well, okay. So good to go back.
All right.
So I never want my lifestyle.
Skydiving later. Because you're the person I want to talk skydiving with.
I only think the people that enjoy skydiving are the people that really hate flying and are afraid of skydiving.
Oh, I think it's, I have streaks of suicidal tendencies. So when I was skydiving, I went, if this is it, this is it.
There's, okay. So that
moment. I went like, all right, I'm going to go splat.
That moment. So if you're a control freak, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want to go skydiving, you're listening to this, or your wife is, that's who needs to go skydiving. Because there is an epiphanous moment when you're screaming at the earth at what, 9.8 feet per second.
Yeah.
And
per second.
And you realize the dice have been rolled.
Yeah.
Like you can't, take a medication. You can't stop drinking. You can't, whoa, hold on. I'm going to change my lifestyle. No. You're either going to live it or going to die, and you can't pick which one it is. And you have to face that. And you have to go like, you either fall apart or you let go. And in that moment, I let go. Yeah. I went, this is life, man.
And you're just flying through. I will, you know what I'm not proud of? My two moments facing death, I got bitchy. I got like, when I got robbed at gunpoint and the guy had me hogtied and he was like literally putting the gun in my face, I got to the point where I was like, okay, like that kind of bitchy. And when I went skydiving, the guy fucked my harness up and pulled it too tight on my leg. So when he pulled the chute, I went, it's too tight. The harness, like he's going to change the harness while we're flying through the air. The two times I almost died, I'm like, can you help my hip out a little? And that's where I'm like, if I'm almost dying, I'm going to be kind of bitchy, I think. I'm going to be like, fine. But blood clots, because I want to.
So I'm afraid of death. I'm afraid of death, but more importantly, I'm afraid of being the cause of my own death. Like, that's why I kind of measure my lifestyle and I work out as hard as I do when I go to doctors.
Do you have an ultimate way you would like to die? Quiet in your bed?
Rescuing kids.
That is a good one.
Yeah. Fighting off an animal. Like, I'm on a path and there's a bunch of kindergartners and I'm walking past them and a bear is chasing them.
That's good.
And I go, you guys run. I'll take care of the bear. But there's someone's filming it. I need a film.
Yeah.
I need that content. Because I'm selling merch on my deathbed.
I need somebody. I got the mic on. Hey, don't talk to me. I got a mic on right now. Ooh, it's cold out. Ooh, it's cold out. Maybe get some new jeans. Maybe you didn't get the jeans you wanted at Christmas. Maybe the jeans you got stink. Well, check out the perfect jean. I'm talking about jeans that fit perfectly and feel like sweatpants. They've redefined what jeans can be. No more crushing your nuts or sagging diaper butt. Pure soft, stretchy perfection. Perfect jean has 6 fits, a size range from 26 to 50 inch waists, and lengths up to 38 for you tall boys, giving you 5,000 plus ways to find your perfect match. For a limited time offer, our listeners get 15% off their first order plus free shipping at theperfectjean.nyc or Google the perfect jean and use the code SOTER15 for 15% off. That's 15% off for new customers at theperfectjean.nyc with promo code SOTER15. After the purchase, they're going to ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. So there you go. Get out of those uncomfortable khakis and jeans. Get into the perfect jeans.
I can't so I've always been cognizant of like, my fear is that they're going to go, your liver failed. And then everyone goes, well, you saw that coming. You know, and there's no empathy for your death.
That's how my dad died.
Yeah.
My dad died in a way where my mom went, could have called that. And you're like, don't have your bitch ex-wife.
Yeah.
Don't have your bitch ex-wife saying to her boyfriend, fucking told you.
Or the people that hate you going like, we saw that coming.
Yeah.
Fucking typical.
Called it. It's like sports. That's like the worst part of sports is when your team loses in a bad way. And then one of the talking heads goes, I knew they were going to do that. And you go, fuck you. It still hurts.
I have a fear of death, but I realized one day that my death is going to be hard on my girls, but it's going to be really hard on them because as a comic, everyone's going to make fun of it for like a week.
Yeah.
So for my girls, they're going to have to literally disappear for like a month from society.
Especially how you die.
Yeah, how I die. And so if I die rescuing kids, then they're like, dad went out noble.
Oh, but my God, we got to do the Bert Kreischer benefit. And then I got to meet all the parents of the kids you saved. Oh. One kid with scars and no eye anymore. And I go, Bert. I know Bert got, and he goes, Bert saved my life. And I go, oh my God. And I got to shake their weird hand that was bit off by a bear. And I got to go, he was a good guy. I got to say that to all the people you saved. He was a good man. Thank you. He was
you
a good
just want to be remembered fondly.
Yeah.
And you want people to miss you. Like, I'll tell you this, this breaks my heart that, this is going to come out weird, but like no one really brings up Ralphie anymore. And like,
which really sucks because Ralphie was the fucking man.
He was such a great comic and such a generous guy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I got to be honest with you, and I don't know if this is real or not. Sometimes I talk out of my ass.
Sure.
Check out my Club Shay Shay interview where I call Kevin Hart lucky.
Did you hear from him?
No.
You didn't hear from him?
I'm going to hear from him soon. I just heard.
Calling Kevin Hart lucky. Listen, greedy is one thing.
No, hold on. You ready for this?
Is not.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I've been saying this for a long time.
Sure.
I know this is going to get clipped out by the fucking miserable people online. And I'm going to look like an asshole.
Edit it if you want.
No, keep it in. Keep it in.
There we go. This is podcast consent.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it in.
Oh, I already said it on Club Shay Shay. Okay. I'm going to get fucked.
Is it Club Shay Shay came out? It came out, though.
Came out today or tomorrow. No, maybe the day. So anyway.
Don't you have anticipation?
Oh, I'm terrified.
Isn't your fucking dick up in your body? I didn't know it didn't come out yet.
He goes,
you just gave me secondhand fucking anxiety.
He said to me, he's doing a great interview. It's such a great interview. Tell me about your dad, this and that. Blah, 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 blah. And then I'm like, I'm killing it. Will Smith. I tell my Will Smith story. I'm like fucking murdering. And then he's like, you think Kevin Hart's lucky? And I was like, and I know what I said. I said it 9 years ago on a podcast and it's just lived.
Yeah.
But it's okay. Kevin Hart, it was at a period of time where Kevin Hart said, I'm the hardest working man in comedy. And a time where we're all working really hard and no one seems to be succeeding. Yeah. And I read that as we're all busting our ass. It's like, to acknowledge your luck. And I said that casually, and an agent goes, you know what Kevin Hart's luck is, right? I went, no. And they go, well, hold on. You didn't know about Kevin Hart's story? And I was like, no. And they're like, he's great and he's talented, but he was put on movie timeout after Soul Plane. And I was like, what?
Not.
And they go, that was his movie. And I was like, really? And they go, yes, Soul Plane was Kevin Hart's movie.
Yeah.
And it didn't perform well. So he got put on movie timeout. He wasn't going to make a movie for like another 10 years. And then they hired Cat Williams for Fool's Gold, which shot like a year later. And they go,
with Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson?
And they all and cast.
Kevin Hart?
All cast. Costumes bought. Wardrobe bought. Everything's bought. Cat Williams packs a gun in his suitcase to shoot, go to location.
What a badass.
Gets arrested.
I didn't know I was supposed to check it, pimpin'. I thought it was a carry-on.
That's so funny that he's just like,
remind me, pimpin', does guns go in carry-on or do they go in check-in? I've been slapping these hoes all day.
Him not knowing luggage is so funny to me. So he just put a gun in his bag?
Yeah, he clearly gets arrested.
Yeah.
And
the only place you can't go with a gun in a bag is absolutely the airport.
Production's sitting in Bermuda, wherever the fuck they are.
Oh, God.
And they're like, we need something small and black. What can we get within the week? And they're like, Kevin Hart.
That's who can fit these suits?
Yes.
Who can fit these colorful suits?
That's why him and Cat Williams hate each other.
Really?
That's what I've been told. Now, that's all hearsay.
Two white guys on a couch in New York.
That's what I've been told. And so I said that 9 years ago.
Sure.
And then Shannon Sharp brings it up. And now I know what I said. I can't go back on what I said. I go, I never said that.
What, are you
then the clip, then the clip comes out like, all right, I said it. So I stood by it. And I say, I then get behind it. I go, every comic has one lucky moment in life that changes their life. For me, the machine story goes viral and the girl writes the first comment. I was in this Russian class. The story's 100% true. I was on this trip. He fucking robbed us. That's mine. Jim Jefferies, he gets punched in the head at the Comedy Store in London. Brent Vincent happens to be his manager who knows how MySpace works. Steals the footage from the security cam, posts it on MySpace, fucking viral. Bill Burr. The Philly fucking rant.
No, I'm not done. I'm still selling merch.
Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Carlos Mencia.
Fucking, that's what I'm talking about. Is every comic's got that fucking moment. I said to Tommy, I go, what was yours? And he goes, Comedy Central passed on my hour. I said, what? And he goes, Comedy Central passed on my hour.
Went to Netflix.
And it went to Netflix. Bill Burr was the only comic on Netflix. If they said, do you like Bill Burr? Which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
You may like Tom Segura.
Holy shit.
So like there's these, every comic has the luck. It is. And if you don't acknowledge your luck or that your luck hasn't happened yet.
I mean, my luck absolutely was doing an open mic in New York City with a writer who was just a writer, thought he was just like a regular guy. Turns out he was the writer of Rounders. Brian Koppelman. And then he puts me in Billions and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
He's like, I wanted to get comics involved. And you're like, oh fuck, I wouldn't think this guy that I just met, I thought he was just a regular dude. And he's like, no, I'm a pretty big screenwriter. And you're like, fuck, that's crazy.
To sit at the mountaintop and go like, I deserve this is irresponsible.
Well, it's almost like an NFL player going, every play went exactly the way I wanted it to. He goes, sometimes the ball bounces off your hands and you fucking catch it. So Shannon Sharp brings this up.
I say it. And then I'm like, and then the second I walk out of the interview, I'm like, this is going to be a long fucking month. And I go, but here's the deal. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that never happened.
I think it's a good point. I think it's a very good point.
Yes.
And I think what it does is it's important for people who are successful to show humility so that they don't think they're bigger than their success.
Listen, dude,
it doesn't mean that Kevin Hart isn't a hard worker. I almost wish he would stop working so then I could like him again, because I don't need to see him in Royal Kingdom ads. I don't need to see him in every fucking ad possible. I think he is so charming. Now, granted, I have different feelings because I love Big J, and I feel like he could have been a better friend to Big J.
Yeah.
So it's a personal thing. But do you know my Shannon Sharp story about when I got high when I was a teenager and he caught me? So Mike McDaniel, the now unemployed coach, he'll land somewhere and he'll fucking win a Super Bowl. He was at Yale. He was going to Yale. I was at the University of Arizona, came home from Alaska. It was like I was about to go back down to Arizona. I was about to drive back down there. And McDaniel's stepdad worked for the Broncos. Now, McDaniel and Kyle Shanahan at the time, Kyle Shanahan played receiver at Texas.
Was there a Shanahan at Indiana last night?
Mike Shanahan is the name of, not related.
Yeah, okay, keep going.
Same name, not related.
Keep going, I'm sorry.
So Kyle Shanahan, at the time, Mike Shanahan's coaching the Broncos. Mm-hmm. Kyle Shanahan and Mike McDaniel are going up to Greeley, this is where their training camp was, to work out with the strength and conditioning coach before they both individually go back to their own colleges, Texas and Yale. So McDaniel's like, well, I'm going to go up to Greeley and work out with Kyle Shanahan. Do you want to come up and watch the Broncos practice? Which is like, if you get any access to the NFL team.
Yeah.
I'm a 49er fan. I didn't give a shit.
I've met people that aren't interested in football. Catherine Blanford, I go, we're going to see the Seahawks. She goes, I don't really care. I go, come out.
It's fun.
Maybe DK Metcalf will hit on you. He did.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
And then she caught a punt and it hit her in the tit and it went viral.
That's great.
Catherine Blanford is gold.
She's hilarious.
She punched Kyle in the stomach.
I saw that. And by the way, where Kyle tried to jump with it and then Catherine still fucking buried it. I was like, that's a Southern woman. That's a Southern woman with a follow through.
My favorite is in the slow motion. You can see her go from smiling to.
Yeah, she goes. And when she leans in, watching Kyle try to push back and her pushing. So this might have been between senior and freshman year of college, but I was friends with. At the time, there was a special teams coach for the Broncos, and his son, Derek, had moved from Decatur, Georgia, to Colorado. So he was hanging out with Mike and us, our friend group, and he had a thick-ass Southern accent, black dude with a thick Atlanta accent, and we were at another high school's house party. Remember when you go to another high school's house party?
Oh, yeah.
The feeling of, like, an away game?
Oh, yeah.
Where you're like, shit's going to pop off.
You were never comfortable.
Never comfortable.
Back against the refrigerator in the kitchen going, I don't know any of these motherfuckers.
And then you know, like a guy you used to play football with, and you go, hey, Cody, you go to school here? So so it wasn't between my senior year of high school, freshman year of college.
That's such a specific feeling that everyone can identify with. Go, oh, yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah, where you're just like, so we're just, I remember.
It's like the first time you put your dick in a vagina without a condom, like, oh, this is amazing.
This is why so many men get in trouble.
Yeah. That was the feeling. Like, it opens the world.
I remember the first time, we might have to cut it, but I remember the first time nutting in a woman. Like, but I mean, like, without a condom and it's cool, where you go, like, go ahead, and then you go. I remember just eating. I went to a diner after, and I was with her. And I was just smiling. And she was, and I was like, what a feeling. I feel alive.
Sponge. She was on the sponge, mine.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mine was.
I was like, why don't we get more of these? Control. They stopped making the sponge, and I had to stop nutting in her.
Sponge-worthy, dude. That was the whole Seinfeld episode. Is he sponge-worthy? You ever see that episode?
No.
Where Elaine is, their limited amount of sponges, and she's dating, and she goes, is this guy sponge-worthy?
That was real.
Yeah.
That was real. They stopped making the sponge.
Yeah.
She couldn't get sponges in Tallahassee.
So Seinfeld did a whole episode where Elaine was choosing which guys were sponge-worthy.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Might have jerked off to it once I found out it meant Elaine was getting busted up inside of. Maybe.
I never thought about it that way.
Yeah, dude. She's getting busted up in, and I'm like, ooh, Elaine's a little cream-filled fucking joy.
You could totally blow loads in Elaine.
Oh, my God. She's my number one.
Wait.
Elaine Bennis is my number one fantasy crush of all time. Later seasons, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is one of the hottest women of all time.
She's sexy.
You cannot convince me otherwise. Even the bad dancing, I was just like, so when I found that sponge thing out, it was like,
oh my God, that's
peak me
so
jerking
hot.
Off. And
that's
I was like,
so hot.
What? Elaine's getting, what? So Derek, I don't want to give away his last name because he's an adult man now, but Derek had this thick ass Decatur accent. We're at another high school party. His dad was the special teams coordinator on both Super Bowl teams. So you can look it up. You can put it together. But he wore his dad's Super Bowl ring out. He just had the 98 Super Bowl ring out. And this is in 2001. And we're at a house party, and you just hear him over the music go, you think I'm going to smack you in your head with my Super Bowl ring? That's what I had. And I looked over, and he was talking shit to this kid from another high school. And I was like, Derek, you're going to cause a fucking melee in here. But Derek was the man, and him and I would smoke weed together. We'd always get high. So McDaniel's like, I'm going to go up to train camp. You want to go? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, Derek's going to come too. And Derek's like, Soder, why don't you drive? We'll smoke blunts on the drive up there. Mike's got to go train, so he can't get high. Why don't me and you drive up there, and we'll fucking smoke blunts? And I was like, it's like a 90-minute drive. You're like, beautiful. So driving up there, listening to fucking, like, Backbone, listening to, like, Atlanta, Southern shit, you know, listening to MJ, Do or Die and shit. So we're getting high.
Do or Die.
Yeah. Do you want to ride? And we're fucking smoking. And we get there, and I am like, for white people that have never smoked with black people, they get...
That should be the opening of a novel.
Yeah.
Like, it's as good as the opening of Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
On my 30th birthday, I knew I had to stop lying to myself.
Yeah. If you've never... I would say the way white people drink, sometimes black people can't hang with the way we drink.
Yes.
Smoking weed, we can't hang.
They call it white chick wasted.
White chick wasted.
Black dudes will go, I'm getting white chick wasted.
Get black dude high.
Oh my God.
Because you fucking, good luck. And I'm a seasoned vet. I'm a lifer. And there's been times with my friend Joe up in the Bronx, and this time with Derek, I was far too high. Because we smoked a little, and then we parked and smoked like two blunts. Ugh. He goes... You know how black dudes call their dead daddies?
Yeah.
How they call their dad daddy? It's always weird to me. Because also, I didn't have a father.
Leanne does it.
So it might be a Southern thing.
And Leanne does it. She goes, daddy's going to sleep.
And they don't say it like, daddy. They go like, my daddy.
Daddy.
They go, daddy. So he goes, Derek goes, I got to go drop my bag off in my daddy's room. I'm staying up here. So he wasn't going to drive back with me. And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever, man. And they're staying at the dorms, at the University of Northern Colorado dorms. This is where their training camp was. So I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm so high that walking is a problem for me where I go, I'm just following you. We go into the dorms. Derek drops his bag off. I'm not even thinking about it. We get on the elevator. The elevator goes down a level, opens up. Brian Greasy, Rod Smith, Shannon Sharp, and I think Howard Griffin all get on the elevator. So four starters on the Broncos. Get in.
Jesus.
I'm high as fuck.
Shannon Sharp is a very large man.
Very large man. And he stands directly next to me. Derek is on my right. Shannon Sharp is on my left. And I'm very high. And Shannon Sharp looks over at Derek and he goes, Derek, I know what you've been doing. I ain't gonna tell your daddy. That's all he says. And I went, and that fucking elevator ride, I was like, Shannon Sharp knows I'm fucking stoned. Shannon Sharp knows I'm stoned.
Tell your daddy.
His mouth was right here.
Yeah.
So I watched him go, I ain't going to tell your daddy. Like that. And I was like, oh. And then I'm like, we get off the elevator. I'm like, Derek, are we in trouble? Because this is like weed's still a drug. Yeah. It's not now.
It's still a drug.
And so people were like, I'm like, Derek, are we fucking in trouble? He's like, no, man, Shannon cool as hell. He ain't going to say shit. And then we're just chilling. And then he goes, come on, let's go out to practice. And we just walk through the locker room. So there's just Al Wilson, buck ass naked. DJ Williams is like getting dressed. All these guys that you're like, all-star, all-star, all-star. Shannon Sharp is getting ready for practice. His locker is open. And Derek's friends with him. So Derek comes over and he goes, what's up, Shannon? And he goes, oh, this is one of them Jacob the Jeweler watches. Remember those with the face where they had the yellow, red, and blue?
Yeah.
And Derek goes, can I put that on? And Shannon, we're high as fuck. Shannon goes, yeah, put it on, Derek. And Derek's like, damn, it's nice. And then Shannon goes, have your little white friend put it on like that. And I put it on and I have skinny wrists and it's just sliding. But I, for a moment, lost myself in the moment. And I was going like, I was doing the P. Diddy Mace from Mo Money, Mo Problems. And then I looked down and Shannon Sharp's looking at me like, what the fuck? And I go, this is very nice. Like that. And then I went outside to watch practice. But that was the most awkward high I've ever been in, being like, Shannon Sharp fucking knows I'm ripped. But he's cool as shit.
He's cool as shit.
I've loved Shannon Sharp ever since. And then he went to the Ravens. He was the fucking man.
He's one of the, it was one of the, There was one interview I've been wanting to do. This is an interview I've been wanting to do. Your show's murdering, right? I mean, just, I don't know. I wonder what the sweet sauce in podcasting is. And
you know what I think it is? I think it's
being genuine. Being excited about it?
Being genuine. Like, yeah. I only have people on my podcast that I want to talk to.
I'm doing that. So with BurtCast, I denied ad sales this year.
That's fucking big.
I can only speak for myself right now.
We did that for the first 6 months. I went, yeah. I'm not taking ads. I'm just going to do a podcast. I'm having my friends on or whatever. And then it's truly is the thing. It's all come back down to middle school and getting girls.
Yeah.
If you don't want them, they want you. If you I don't want it, they go, but why?
I got really lucky in a couple of people that I got on early in their careers in music that went on to be a little bigger.
Marcus King, Red Clay Strays.
A couple, yeah.
Yeah, fucking Jelly Roll.
Wilson Jr.
Stephen Wilson Jr. is the fucking man. Everyone needs to listen to Stephen Wilson Jr.
I mean, he's...
That song, Gary, if you have a problem with your father, go listen to Stephen Wilson Jr.
Goose.
Goose? I remember that.
A few bands that I really liked. And then some more legacy acts like Warren Haynes.
Sure. And Warren Haynes is the fucking man. Yeah. And everyone should watch the Opie and Anthony where he plays the guitar and Patrice sings.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's really fun.
And so when I went to Nashville, I did...
He was in Government Mule?
Yeah. Yeah. He is Government Mule. Yeah.
Yeah, they're fucking sick.
When I went to Nashville, I had a bunch of publicists coming up to me going, how do we get ... Like, how do we get... The first one that came up, they were like, hey, how do we get Luke Bryan on your show? And I'm a big Luke Bryan fan.
Sure.
And I was like, are you serious? And they're like, yeah, we'd love to get him on your show. And I was like, great. So at that moment, I was with Leanne and I said, you know, I love having comics on my show, and I'd have comics like you or Jay or people like Legion of Skanks.
That you have shorthand with.
Yeah, it's not an interview, but like I don't want to try to break young comics anymore.
Sure.
There was a period, I know that no one really probably sees us this way, and maybe I'm imagining it, but there was a period where I was having young comics come on, and it was fun. Like Mark Norman, he was like, I'm really bad at podcasting.
Yeah.
This is like 2015.
I remember that you had me on in the old man cave.
Yeah.
Cause Ari was like, yeah, Bert will have you on. And I was like, oh fuck. Cause I was promoting my Comedy Central special and fuck, LA was like the moon.
It was when LA was hot. I mean, I remember,
Tim Dillon.
Tim Dillon. I mean, like having Andrew Schultz. I had Andrew Schultz on like when he was young. I don't think he'd even started his podcast.
No. I don't know how old his podcast is, but yeah.
He doesn't seem like a guy that was late to the game on anything.
No, he's always been ahead of the curve.
But at the time, you'd have them on, and then you didn't know them. I know Andrew Schultz, and I remember he talked wild. He was like, I was like, so what's your 5-year goal? And he goes, be the GOAT. I mean, he said this specifically to me, and I was like, so weird at the time. I was like, whoa, don't say that out loud.
Yeah, what's so funny about that is seeing someone's success like that, you go, oh yeah, they've always had that focus. And also,
he's like, Burr, Chappelle, I'm coming after them. And I remember going like, hey, do you want me to edit that out? And he was like, no, that's my goal. And I was like, wow. And then you watch his success and you're like, that makes sense. Those days, sadly, are a thing of the past where you're going to find a Tim Dillon or a Shane Gillis or a Mark Norman or a you or a Big J or a Lewis or a and have them on and it be gold. And then say to your friends, yo, you got to get this guy on.
Yeah.
And then now it's like, it just feels like, and also I wasn't successful. So it was a real genuine conversation.
Sure.
Now when you bring someone to that house, I have that house and people are like,
young. Does it feel like an interview? Feels like a job interview?
A little bit. People come in the first thing they're like, how did you get this? And then the interviews have flipped a little bit with younger comics where they're like, so when you promote, and so it became less of a hang and more of like a weird thing.
I bet I'm going to be honest right now. I bet there's a lot of podcast fans that feel less crazy hearing you say that, because I think as podcasts have become as commodified as they have, I think fans are going, why does it feel different?
And, it feels different to me.
And you have to be honest. This is a business of like, if you're dishonest, your shit will blow up in your face because people are waiting to do the video where they go, this isn't who he really is.
Yeah, the birds change. And you're like, no, I know I have, but like, also I'm trying to stay the same, but it's like, things have changed around me.
Yeah.
And so And so
you're also a force. Like, you're unlike a lot of people that I know. You're just like a fucking avalanche. Like, you, the way you hit and the way that you, I would say something that you don't get complimented on is you do a great job of making the situation yours in a way that feels like.
Remember that story about waking up early for Easter sunrise at Red Rocks and how tough it was to get moving in the cold? That's kind of how meal planning can feel. Something you know you should do, but it's hard to get excited about. Marley Spoon makes it easy to skip the stress and enjoy good food, no matter how busy life gets. With over 100 recipes each week, there's always something new, from comforting classics to fresh, balanced dishes. Whether you want to cook from scratch or just heat something up, Marley Spoon fits your routine. Every meal is chef-designed and made with quality ingredients, so you can feel good about what you're eating. Go to marleyspoon.com/offer/pod45 for 45% off your first order and free delivery. That's right, 45% off your first order and free delivery. That's marleyspoon.com/offer/pod45.
Like, I think about you, when I knew we were doing this podcast, I was like, what would Bert do if he wasn't a comedian? And it would easily be the greatest camp counselor of all time.
Oh,
you would, you're the guy. I listen, and we can edit this out if this becomes a real thing. I would 100% write a movie about you going to a like gay conversion camp and becoming their fun counselor, where it just becomes a scene where you like break these kids out, or like you're a camp counselor and you break the gay conversion kids out and they're just like, yeah, and like you just banging a drum. You remember those fun 90s comedies?
Yes.
Where they were like
Meatballs.
Yes.
Meatballs.
Camp Nowhere.
Yeah.
All this shit where you were like, I think we need to return to summer camps. We need to return to like kids in canoes and fucking chicken fighting in the water.
Dude.
And getting poison ivy. You got to return to kids.
I have a thing about me that is like, I like being a Pied Piper. I like
yes.
being in charge. I like, not in charge, but I like being the momentum.
Sure.
I'll give you this is a great Brian Koppelman story. And Brian, obviously everyone's truth is whatever truth.
Yeah.
I can slide into my DMs and read them aloud. But Brian Koppelman, after I did The Machine, wrote me a part in Billions.
Oh my God.
He wrote a part for me.
Yeah.
And he DM'd me and he goes, yo, I wrote a part for you in Billions. I think it was about a guy that was like a CEO that eat cheeseburgers or something.
Yeah.
And then he was like, and I wrote back, I'm going to pass. And he went, you haven't read it.
Yeah.
And he's like, hold on. And he wrote back, like, this isn't how that works. If someone writes something for you,
you do it.
And I said, you know, I think I'd be bad at this because I like to be the star of the thing so that I can go into everyone's dressing room and I can change the energy and
sure.
I can dictate the fun energy. Like when we did Free Bert, every Friday we've worked all week. Every Friday I would plan an event to make the crew lose their mind. So one time I bought 700 Crystal Burgers.
Great.
And so I was like, I bought so many Crystal Burgers that when they went to pick them up, Crystals had chains on the door because they were still making burgers and they couldn't allow anyone in.
Do you ever think about the causality of like, what a great gift for the crew? And then you think about the fry cook that's down there and he's just like covered in sweat and he's like, how many more? And they're like, you're at 423. And he's like, we got to get to 700. And they go, yeah. And we're also only paying you $7.25 an hour. And he's like, ah!
400 cheeseburgers yeah. from McDonald's.
Oh my
700 God. 700 Crystal Burgers. I get fucking 20 pizzas at like, at the end of every Friday, I just order like 20 pizzas from one place, 20 pizzas from another
yeah.
place. But I love that energy. When I was doing the movie in Serbia, I said, everything was so cheap there that I was like, yo, what would it cost to have my house catered? I had like a 4-story house. I go on it catered and I want a sommelier to come out with all their own wines. I want to buy all their wines for the whole crew and cast or the whole cast.
Sure. There's
like, you know, 20 of us. And they're like, $400? And I go, all right, I'll do it. I go, and get a DJ. And so in my house, I have...
He goes, that is the chef as well in Serbia.
Yeah.
He also is a cobbler.
And then,
so
by
if
the way,
you need any shoes fixed.
The DJ came in and he was like, this can also be a karaoke,
he
huh?
goes, I also, you want girls?
Yeah.
You go, no, you keep those.
But
you
like that, those. Taking taking what you know, that energy is sure. What I, is the only reason I do a movie or a TV show. I like acting, I like writing, I like making a project, but that energy of like this nuclear family, this camp energy yeah. is what I enjoy. And I like being the Pied Piper of the camp. I don't know, it's like being on tour when we did Fully Loaded. I love that energy of going. I remember sitting down with all of us, we're sitting at this table in Boise, Idaho, and it's the funniest human beings alive. It is the funniest human beings alive at a table with my daughter, Georgia. And we're busting balls. Jay, someone sat in a chair and it broke. And Jay went off on this soliloquy about how only fat guys intimately know the feeling of what that laughter, that fake laughter you're doing is. And it was so good.
Can I tell you one of my favorite moments I've witnessed in comedy was at Skankfest watching Jay tape Dog Belly. And it was the second taping. And second taping, Jay knew they had it. They're filming it. This fat guy broke a chair. And Big Jay, in the middle of the set, goes, "Why are you sitting on the ground?" And the guy goes, "The chair broke." And he goes, "You're living my nightmare right now." And he just called it out in such a perfect Big Jay
yes,
way
yes.
that you're like, it was so funny. It's and I so, was like hidden behind one of the cameras.
So vulnerable.
I was laughing
he
so
He did that
hard.
At the fucking yeah. breakfast table
yeah.
in this vulnerable yeah. call out. And it was brilliant, right? We're yeah. all laughing. I want to say Stavi, Mark Norman, Big Jay, Santino.
I did 1 week of that tour, and that was the Ralph Barbosa,
yeah,
Santino.
Barbosa, Santino. Yeah.
I know what you're and, that was the Gorge.
Yeah, the, yeah. And yeah. Georgia's sitting at the breakfast table, and everyone goes off. We're going to go tubing or shooting gun, whatever we're going to do next. It's like 10 in the morning, and Georgia looks at me and goes, "I've never laughed as hard as I just did."
Yeah.
And I went, "Yeah." And she goes, is this every morning? And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "Is this what your life is like?" And I said, "Yeah, baby, that's why I spend so much time with these guys. Isn't that great?" And she goes, "No wonder you never came home." And I was like, "Yeah, these guys are the
that's
funniest.
Like a country song.
The funniest human beings." And yeah. then my daughters slowly started to fall in love with the comics as like uncles, where they'd go like,
Shane Isla? Busting Isla for having beers or who? No,
Georgia.
Georgia having a beer and dude, Shane the, going, "You drinking beers?"
And Shane he goes up to Georgia and Daisy. This is like the first year maybe. And he just last night and he goes, "You guys sneaking beers?" They're like 18. And he goes, "No." And he goes, "Come on, I'm not going to bust you." And they're like, no, we're not sneaking beers. And he goes, "Guys, I'm not your dad. I'm Shane. What are you guys doing? Sneaking a little beers? Little BLs?" And they're like, "Yeah, we're sneaking beers." And he goes, "Okay." And he goes, sits down right next to me. He goes, "Georgia's sneaking beers." Isla and Big J. Yeah. Isla and Big J on the bus yeah. after. Like, Isla's supposed to be working, and she's dressed as Big J.
I mean,
they
dresses,
look like twins.
Yeah.
They look like twins to this day.
She looks like if Big J, if she was Big J's daughter, their house burned down, and the only clothes available was dad's.
Yes. Where Isla like, and Big J on the bus, sitting in the two recliners, watching YouTube videos together, laughing hysterically. Yeah. I walk on the bus, and then the bus for a full year, I couldn't get out of Jay's algorithm.
Yeah.
So it was Jay and Isla's algorithm.
Oh,
so if
yeah.
you ever turned on YouTube, it was like some dude getting lit on fire.
Oh, dude.
It was
or a pedophile bus.
You go,
why do I have a 9-hour pedophile bust in my feed?
That was the like.
When we were on the road with Shane, it goes to our old school hangs.
Yeah.
Where we're both opening for Shane, and you know, Shane does the thing where he goes like, we land and he goes, "All right, I'll see you guys pick up at the hotel 6 p.m. And Jay and I will be like, "You want to get high and go watch YouTube?" And then Jay will be like, "Fuck it, we'll just smoke a joint in the hotel room." And we're like by the elevator of a very nice hotel. And we're just sitting there and he goes, "You got to hear this." And he'll put it on his beats. He's like, "You got to hear when the guy gets caught." And we're just sitting there watching pedophile bus in like a 4-star smoking fucking gas. Oh. It's so fun. But that is the summer camp. When I thought about that, I was like, oh, Bert would absolutely be yeah. a camp counselor.
I was fully loaded. I mean, it
was so fucking fun, dude.
It was so
Big J and I and DeRosa, there was one show where we went like, hey, someone put a special out. And you know the rule with me, everybody. And the rule's always been the same. When you see me live, you can ask me who it is and I will tell you. I will not tell you via DM. I will not write it down. But I will tell you in person.
There was a special that just came out that I almost texted you and Jay, and I was like, "Can we watch it together?"
We'll talk after the podcast because we still do that.
I tried to buy it, and I was texting with Joe and Tom, and yeah. I was like, "Cause in our group, I watch all the specials first, and then I give notes." So like I watch a special and I just send notes and they're like, and then immediately they're like, more notes.
Dude, Shane and I's conversation is always the same. Starts with football, immediately goes into whose special we just watched.
Oh.
It'll go like, it will like trail out. Well, he always does the thing whenever he picks up the phone that we do sports talk Colin.
Yeah.
So we'll pick up and go, on the phone, we got Dan Soder. We're talking 49ers. We're talking Mike McDaniel. And I'll go, and we're talking AFC East, Shane. I don't think. So that's how we always start. But then it immediately goes, yo, did you watch so-and-so's special? And you go, I did. And here are my notes.
I cannot wait to talk about.
We're going to cut the mic soon. And me and you are going to go, before your next thing, we got to talk three things before it. Because I got one that I have 6 points. That the second the mic's cut off, we'll talk about it.
There's a
comics love shitting on David Costable, who's on Billions,
yeah,
who plays Wags.
Yeah,
he's one of the greatest characters. He's one of the greatest actors of our generation. I will argue that David Costable was He was Gil in Breaking Bad. He was one of the editors in The Wire season 5. He's in Lincoln. And I know him from playing Wags.
Yeah.
On Billions. First day in hair and makeup, season 1. My first day, hair and makeup. I'm there. Me and Costable are both in hair and makeup. And I went, hey, man, I'm Dan. I'm playing Mafia. I'm not an actor. I'm a stand-up comic, so I'm going to be asking for a lot of help. I was very overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Very overwhelmed when I first started on Billions. I would ask for help, and I all through all 7 seasons I did. But Costable is the man.
Yeah.
And he goes, you're a stand-up comic. And I go, yeah. He goes, second meanest group in entertainment to each other. And I went, second. And he goes, only behind Broadway dancers. He goes, they'll push each other downstairs to get a role. Comics will do the same verbally. And I went, you know a lot of stand-up comics. Like that. And he goes, I do. And I was like, yeah, he's the fucking man. That was that. When he said that to me, that crystallized it in my head where I go, we are just fucking, we're like, we're bitchy. We're like,
well, it's like you're doing the same thing I do.
Sure. And I have notes on it.
And I have notes.
Yeah.
I have notes.
But also,
I watched someone special recently within the last, 6 months.
Sure.
And whenever they come out, I'm always in the gym that morning and I'm with my trainer and my assistant and I hit play and I predict what their open's going to be.
Ooh.
And I predict his open to a fucking T.
Love it.
I did it before they saw it. I said, let me tell you how this is going to go.
Yeah.
And I hit pause and I did it.
Oh.
And then I hit
you know who's the master?
And it happened and I went,
you know who's the master at that? Big J.
I bet.
One of our first bonfire-ish hangs was Nick Cannon put out a special.
I remember this. I watched Nick Cannon's special with Jay.
Mr. Showtime.
That
and
special.
He could pause it and go, I'll tell you exactly what this punchline is. Because he did all rehashed Black Circuit jokes.
Yeah.
Where he's like, we didn't have Tony the Tiger. Things weren't great. We had Tyrone and Jay was like, Jay at one point paused it and went, splat ow, and then hit it, and then Nick Cannon goes, splat ow. It was, dude, it was one of those.
I watched that with
Jay.
Is that the one where his shoes were all untied?
It's where he gets undressed eventually.
Yeah, he starts
in the tuxedo, and by the end, he's like just in a wife beater.
Oh.
We were obsessed with it. Big Jay made me laugh the hardest I've ever laughed in my life. Pete Davidson was opening for Nick Cannon, and we used to just bust Pete Davidson's balls about how little he gets paid by Nick Cannon. And Nick Cannon was working out new material at Governor's in Long Island. And this is when Jay was living on Long Island. And Jay goes, Pete was like, I can get you guys tickets if you want. And we're like, yeah. And Big Jay's like, come out to Long Island. And I took the train out. We smoked like 2 joints at his house. We go to Governor's. We sit in the very back. And at one point in the show, this is when Nick Cannon's hosting America's Got Talent. So it's a lot of older white people are in the audience. And Nick Cannon's doing this bit where he goes, I'm serious, y'all. We could end racism if we want to. We could end racism tonight. And Jay from the very back goes, and starts a slow clap, Bert, that the audience popped off. And I had to go into the lobby because I was laughing so hard. Because Jay just stands up and gives one, and then you just see everyone go, yeah, we can end racism. Oh. It was... Oh, take me back. That was one of the hardest I've ever laughed in my life, to the point where I was like, my ribs hurt when I got in the car. It was great.
I'm bummed that I don't live in New York because I miss all you guys.
Sure.
Like I watch, it seems like so much fun. I feel like New York's having like, has had for the past few years, a minute where it's like, everything fun seems to be out of New York.
Well, it's just you can get to it so fast. Like, what it is like, I'll be doing a set at the Cellar, and then Lewis will be like, can you come do Legion of Skanks? And you go, oh, it's five blocks away. Let me just walk over. And then, or someone, like, for instance, Shane will be in town doing something, and then he'll just pop in on Skanks. Or he'll just be like, you at the Cellar? Let's eat wings. And you're like, oh, this is the shit.
Yeah.
It is a great city because there's so much. The reason I would argue New York is so great is there's so much shit happening here that people are here all the time. I got a text. I get to see three LA friends this week. You, Santino, and Adam Ray. All in LA. All doing different cool shit.
Yeah.
And you go, awesome. Also, Shane's doing the garden. So all these people are
coming.
When's
Shane doing the garden?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
This week?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I'm doing it with him Friday. I think the lineup is me, Attell, Michael Che, and Shane.
Wow.
I know Thursday is Santino, Colin Quinn, Big J, and McCusker.
Holy then Shane. Shit.
And Saturday, this is going to come out after the shows. Saturdays are Louis C.K. and two other people. I don't know who.
Shit, I'm doing four at the Garden, but I'm the same guys. Just kidding. I'll be at the Beacon in April.
Yeah, by the way, you're doing multiple. Here's what's fucked up about comedy.
Jesus
Christ. You're doing my dream gig.
Everyone's doing everyone's dream gig.
But you're doing two at the Beacon, three at the Beacon?
I don't know.
I think Sagalow told me you're doing like two or three at the Beacon, and I was like, oh, I'm hanging out for that.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm going to come and fucking kick it.
I mean, obviously, you know, I think what happens is you got to go to the top of the mountain to see what it looks like, right?
For sure, but then you realize the air is very thin up there.
Very thin, and by the way, I will tell you, you're standing by yourself. Yeah. There's not a lot of people rooting for you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people wanting you to fail. There's a lot of people kind of hating on you.
Can I tell you, as a guy that lives at base camp, I go up a little. I go pick some odd berries up on the mountain, but I come back down to base camp.
No. You know what you are? You are a well-acclimated Sherpa who, by the way, could be at the top of the mountain if you wanted to, but right now you're just making runs back and forth.
I really appreciate that, and I genuinely agree with you.
Yeah. Because I'm telling you, someone said
I just have my little wool hat on.
I want to say on Club Shay Shay.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I don't know who I said this to. They're like, I was like, I have a really good knack for telling you. But I think all comics do.
Sure.
I go, all comics can tell you who's going to be the next big thing. I think Shannon Sharp said, who's the next big thing? I said, Dan Soder. The second, all he needs is that little luck thing where everyone's like, and you're across all platforms. Yeah.
But, I think something that really, really helped me that I don't think you realized is leaving the Bonfire was very, very difficult for me. It took, you know, I gave Jay a year advance notice. I was very anxious about it because it was a true, like, bet on myself. Because the job was so fun and so great, but I felt myself being comfortable. And I said, I need to go do stand-up. And I need to go do a lot of stand-up. And I'm burned out. 8 hours of broadcasting a week.
Yeah.
Being as funny as I can fucking, because I tried on that show. I truly was like, took advantage of being able to be funny with Jay for eight. He's the funniest person I've ever met in my life. And I don't mean that on a knock on anybody else in comedy.
No.
Naturally funny, Big Jay is miles ahead of anybody Everyone. I've ever met. And so it was such an opportunity to do it. But I really got to tell you, when I went on Fully Loaded, and I remember the show, it was the Baltimore show. I got on the bus and I was getting a joint out, and you and Leanne both at the same time went, hey, you made the right decision to leave the Bonfire. You need to go do more stand up. Both of you said that to me. Yeah. It was that and Bill Burr saying that to me that made me go like, all right, maybe I'm not, because I felt crazy. And listen, I'll always, I would love to go do that show as much as possible, but I want them to have their, Bobby and Jay to have their own show, and I want to fuck that up. I love those fans. I'm always going to love those fans, but that's what I needed. I needed another comic going, I know that's really hard, but you're doing the right thing, and I can see it's paying off.
I mean, that one tour was where I was like, wow, this is, you've made an absolute turn. Stand-up wise is like, it's like undeniable. It's like really honestly, like the first round of Fully Loaded when Big J sat on a stool and did material.
Yeah.
Shane and I were in the back like, dude.
And I know
fuck.
I know Shane would never tell Big J this story, But I was in London. That's why I couldn't do Fully Loaded the first year, because I went and did shows in London. And I came back and I was on the phone with Shane. And he's like, it's the best. This tour is the best. It's me and Norman and Jen. I go, how's Jay's doing? He goes, dude, he's fucking doing material and he's murdering.
Dude,
he goes, it's so fun. And I know Shane would never say that to Big Jay.
Yeah.
But it's like,
dude, that
people
version
compliment
of Shane,
each other.
That version of Shane, and there's every iteration. I love every version I've gotten of Shane, right?
Sure.
Like the very first version was this like little bit timid, little scared, very hat in hand Shane. Have you ever read his email to me about why we should be friends?
Yeah.
It's so great.
About that, because they did the Don't Come Into Work show.
Yeah, we did Calling Sick to Work show.
Yeah, Calling Sick to Work.
And like that version,
that was when he's on the road with me.
But the version, my favorite, out of all my favorites, and I love it's all gotten better.
Sure.
But out of all, if I could get a grab of Shane, it was that first Fully Loaded. I think he was on every date, and his enthusiasm for stand-up, he was working on his Beautiful Dogs, I think.
Yeah, it was.
And his enthusiasm for all stand-up, all stand-up was so...
He loves the shit.
...infectious. And I remember him saying, the very first show, he's kind of pacing with a Bud Light, and he goes, you're not going to walk out on stage, are you? And I go, what? And he goes, dude, we got a bullpen out there. We're playing Enter Sandman. You come running for the bullpen. Yeah. You come sprinting up on stage. If you don't do that... then what are you doing?
Yeah.
This is like a professional. And he got me so pumped. And I was like, for real? And he goes, fuck yeah. And I got in the bullpen.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I was like, yeah. And then he was like, and I remember him just firing me up. Yeah. And he was so pumped every single fucking night.
You know, I think the thing you learn from different people when you bump into them in this business, and you're a fool if you don't take away lessons when you leave.
Yeah.
I was on the road with Shane for about 2 years, and he was my feature. And I mean, when I mean featuring for me, it's like, good luck following that. He made me raise my shit up by following him. But the thing that I learned about it, and the thing that I took with me, was how much fun he had doing stand-up, which at that point in my career, I think I had lost a little. I think I had lost we're doing the DC Draft House. Yeah. And he's like, isn't this cool? We're doing two shows, and then we're going to go play video games? And I was like, yeah, this does rule. And then he would be like, I'm going to do this joke. It's going to bomb. And then he'd do it, and he'd go, that joke sucks. But he was having so much fun.
He was having...
That it made me go like... I'm a fucking asshole. I should just be loving this shit.
I'm jealous that I'm not on this journey with him as a friend.
Sure.
That, like, I can't open for him because we're working at the same time.
I think you can.
But I mean, I would love to. I would love to. I just don't have any time.
Yeah.
But I would love to see, because I've seen these weird iterations. I was with him like when we did Arizona, the Celebrity.
I remember
theater.
You guys did, by the way, that was his like, I would say you ushered him up into a different level, because those Super Bowl shows that you guys did with Norman, you, Norman, and Shane, the week before the Eagles-Chiefs Super Bowl.
I forgot about that.
But I, just as his friend, I watched him. Shane's groupies, and no one understands this, Shane's groupies are professional athletes. They love Shane.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I forgot about that Super Bowl. I was with him in Celebrity
You brought
theater.
Out Big J.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. At the last minute, we got him a Super Bowl ticket for $120,000.
Fuck.
That was the total for all the tickets.
Yeah,
an idiot, I go, guys, the pay is not great, because it was like an arena, but it wasn't.
You
like
were doing
a huge
where they
arena.
Play ASU hockey,
so it was like 10,000. It wasn't like nine or whatever, maybe 7,000. I don't know.
It's a smaller
place. Arena, and so I go, the pay's not great, but I'll get everyone Super Bowl tickets, and they're all Eagles fans. So like, great. So and I was like, sure. Agent hits me up. He's like, I got you the tickets. I go, cool. It was six tickets, $120,000. And I was like, but then I was like, okay. So I just, we just throw every money I earned at this show.
Yeah. You go, well, I'm not making any money today, but my
there
friends
goes
are going
all
to football.
Merch
game.
Money. My. Yeah. But I remember being with Shane when we were at the Celebrity Theater and he was opening for me. And as in 15 minutes, he got a standing ovation and he didn't know what to do with it.
That's really funny.
I remember those Super Bowl shows where it was like Mark and Shane. Now, this is a nuance because I'm not shitting on Mark, but Mark wasn't ready for arenas yet because he moves.
Yeah.
And in arenas, everything plays in the small screen. So if you move, the camera can't keep up with you and it makes people motion sick.
That makes sense.
So the first night, Mark didn't do well. Shane fucking murdered. And then Shane came off like, and I went up going, how do I follow that? Brother, by the way, it's beautiful. He's doing beautiful dogs.
Brother, I want to tell you right now, I was on the road when he cracked the Special Olympics joke.
Oh, my God.
You want to talk about following something. You, the first night he goes, we should be racing him. And you hear the crowd go, whoosh. And I, you know what's funny about this? And I think Shane would agree with me that this happened. It was at MGM in Springfield, that club in Springfield. That was the weekend he cracked the joke because I went through a breakup. I broke up with my girlfriend that weekend and I was very sad. And I got bitchy at him and I go, just don't like kill too hard. Because I was mad and he went, okay. And then after the show, he goes, you're really going through with this breakup. I go, yeah, man, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it.
We were,
he
we,
would fucking I was,
I was,
murder.
I was with him. This is my favorite one. I'm going to tell the whole thing and just
sure.
If it sounds weird, just do whatever
you want. He's great at editing.
So it's me, Tommy, and we're co-headlining the MGM Grand Garden Arena.
I was there.
It's Bobby.
Bobby and, Lee. It went, I'll tell you the lineup. It went Trevor Wallace, Bobby Lee, Shane, you.
No, Tom, you.
Me,
yeah. Well, so everyone was terrified about where they were going in the lineup. Sure. Trevor knew he was going first. Bobby did not want to follow Shane. No one wanted to follow Shane. Shane's at the top of his game, and it just got announced he's hosting SNL, like a week before.
He was the reason I got to go to that Super Bowl. Well, him and Che. Che got me the ticket, and Shane gave me the hotel room.
By the way, with...
Because Bud Light gave him two hotel rooms.
With Shane announced... No, Shane was unannounced.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't announce Shane because it would have complicated things. They would have wanted to add a show. I mean, it was just... Sure. It would complicate things. So we couldn't announce Shane, but we had to pay him. And so Shane, typical Shane Gillis, and everyone should know this, I don't need money.
Yeah.
That's Shane to a T. I don't need money. I'm good.
Yeah.
You got Bud Lights back there?
Yeah.
Making my dad come back? You know, Nate Diaz wants to come. Can I get tickets for him?
I was hanging out with Phil. Phil McCusker and I sat in one of the empty entryways and watched that whole show.
Yeah.
Can I tell you my favorite moment from that night?
Yeah.
This is one of the hardest me and McCusker have ever laughed. So McCusker and I, Phil is watching the whole show.
Yes.
Phil Gillis is watching the show. And Phil, for those of you that don't know, I call him the prototype. You watch him and you go, I see where Shane comes from.
Yes.
Phil is the man. One of my favorite moments from that Super Bowl was late that night after that show, I gambled. The blackjack table was me, Michael Che, and Phil Gillis. And I watched Phil and Che become close friends as we're all gambling.
Really?
Shane and Gabe Davis and Austin Kincaid and all these guys are out.
Yeah.
They're going to meet Jack Harlow. They're going to do shit. We are fucking down at this blackjack table. And Shane's like, are you guys still at that blackjack table? I'm like, you know where we're at. And he's like, Jesus, my dad. He's like, is my dad gambling? I'm like, we're having... Dude, Shane has one of those things on like this.
Yeah.
And he's just pulling out hundreds and putting them in front of me and Phil. And he's going, slush fund. And we keep calling it the slush fund. And he goes, slush fund. And Phil goes, Michael, I'm ordering another drink and we're getting out. After it, the hardest I laughed, you were doing a joke about you and Tom being best friends. And you go, me and Tom are best friends. And then you start talking about you guys fucking or sucking each other's dicks. And you're just riffing. And you go, I'll suck his dick. He'll suck. And I know he'd know how to suck my dick. And me and McCusker are standing behind Phil Gillis. And Phil's standing there like a dad like this. And you go, and I'm sucking his dick. And Phil goes, that's enough for me. And just turns around while you're like, suck. And dude, me and McCusker were like, yo, Phil wasn't having that gay shit. It was one of the hardest I've ever laughed just watching him go. You go, and I'm going to suck Tom's dick like this. And he goes, nope. And just walked away.
One of my biggest memories of that night.
That was a fun ass night.
So I had to close the show. And by the way, it's the stuff I put on Lucky.
Sure.
It's the first probably 30 minutes of Lucky is that show. And Lucky is one of my better ones. I think it's one of my best ones. And so it was really good. And my material was pretty tight and it was different than everyone else's. Shane's standing next to Michael Che and he's talking to Michael Che. I don't know what they're talking about. And then I walk past and Shane looks at me and he goes, and I'm shirtless. This is at the after party. And I was like, what's up? He was like, I go, what? And he goes, you know, man, you're a fucking fantastic comic. And I went, oh, thanks. And he goes, no matter what anyone says about you, you're a fantastic comic. And I was like,
what
do they say about me? And he's like, no, I mean, no matter what. Like, he just,
don't fuck like, this up, man.
He's like, the shirt thing, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
oh my God, that's so fucking
it's
funny.
So fucking.
Yeah, that night was fun as hell.
That was a fucking, dude, it's like, you don't get, I'm not going to get many more of those in life.
Well, I think the point of it is that you've got those.
I have them, yeah.
And you have, like, a lot of those. You have four Red Rocks, like what we started talking about at the beginning. Like, you got to do something. That's why I always say it's like, there's this idea of what's next, and it's like, fuck what's next. Look what you've got to do and lay it and enjoy that.
Yeah.
Because I think what happens is our business, you rush to the next thing too fast, and then you look back. I regret not soaking in billions more.
Oh.
Like, that was a fucking world-class experience. I regret not soaking in the bonfire more. I regret not having more time. That's why this theater, my first theater tour, I've been very, very aware of, like, oh, every day we go out, I go, how fucking cool. Ask him, he's been on the road with me every day. I'm like, how fucking cool is this? That this is our job.
Yeah.
That this is what we fucking do. And it's like, yeah, oh, I gotta be at the fucking theater at 6 p.m. And then I'm going.
Are you
there
on a tour bus?
No.
Okay.
We're doing rental cars, which is.
You're saving a ton of money, probably.
Oh, a ton of money, yeah. But it is a lot. It is, yeah. Like, I'm driving 5 hours between gigs, getting there, doing it.
I
still love it.
You look at those, like, favorite moments. Like, I said to myself, because we did last fall, we did an arena tour, and then this year was supposed to be all arenas. And I was like, there's a lot of stress in selling arenas, but I was like, yo, I'm getting ready for a special. I should be doing two a night. I should be doing theaters.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, I'll never have a problem going back to theaters. And then I did two theaters this weekend, and I was like, fuck theaters.
Really?
But it's so funny because it's like arenas are so easy. Wake up, there's bathrooms, there's a gate, you have catering, you have everything set up. And then, but after doing the theaters, I was like, yo, and this sounds crazy, but like I go, my act needs theaters. Like, yeah. It's I've gotten to the place where.
Well, then you'll see it sometimes where, like, I'll talk to Louie or something, and they go, then you drop down into clubs, and it's like very close, tight, like tightening it up.
Oh my God.
But the thing that I said, especially with you and guys like you, Shane, guys that have toured with arenas, it goes, well, you've done it. Now you get to go back to theaters and go, oh, this is, now we'll do two a night. We'll do four in a weekend.
Yeah.
Like I said, when you said the Garden thing, I go, dude, you're doing the Beacon.
Beacon's a dream.
I mean, Norman did two at the Beacon, and he's like, you want to do a guest set? And I was like, dude, this is my dream. Doing a guest set at the fucking Beacon. Like, I'll tell you what's better than doing arenas is opening for your friend at arenas. Because you go do 10 minutes, and then I'm eating chicken fingies, watching fucking yeah. Shane telling the Cliff story. And I go, this is where I'm, like, on the road with Shane, I go, this is the best. And what I told Shane is, I was like, when him and I used to go on the road together, he would always go, this is the best. We're just, I get to feature for you. All we do is we write jokes during the day. We fuck around at night.
Yeah.
This is the best. He would always go, this is my favorite thing. This is one of those things where I look back and I go, what a cool, I got to be a part of something where Shane, when he started headlining, he called me, and in a very Shane way, he goes, I hate headlining. And I go, why do you do it? He goes, I hate it because I have to do a whole hour and they put checks out and there's too much pressure. I want to go back to featuring for you. And then, so he always used to jokingly say that. And this is as pandemic happened. So the pandemic happens, he blows up or whatever. And then now, and I go, thanks for letting me go back to featuring. And he goes, you son of a bitch. And I go, it's the best. I go in an arena. I get a pop because I'm a special guest. I just compact my best jokes. And then I go, and then now, sir, an hour in the arena, please.
I would love to open
it,
for him.
Oh, do it. You know how much fun it would be for you to be a surprise guest?
I would love to do that.
Literally, Bert, it takes one text. And then they'll go, what dates do you have available? Someone will reach out.
Yeah.
But more importantly, thank you for coming on my podcast.
No, thank
Free
you
Bert, it, watch it on Netflix. I'm very excited to see
this. I want to say this.
Shot beautifully.
Thank you. I did. So I made it. I didn't want it to be episodic.
Okay.
So I made it. So that I remember when I pitched it to Netflix, I said, I want to make Black Doves.
Sure.
And they're like, what? I go, when you watch Black Doves or like Slow Horses, you watch that first episode and you go, at the very last second, you go, I'm invested in this character. I want to watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I've made it like that. So I hope you enjoy the first episode. And if you do, you will watch. I hope you enjoy the whole season.
How many episodes?
It's six episodes. It's an arc.
Right.
So it's not episodic. It's not like Bert gets a birthday cake and then we get a new dog. And then the next episodes, we have a double date. You know, it's not a sitcom in that. It's a series in that it's an arc. And all I can say is, you know, I'm really proud of it, and I hope everyone enjoys it. And if you do, and if you don't, just play all six episodes. Just fucking does just it
like,
matter?
Go in the other room.
Was it like, wouldn't you give a little goodwill to a guy?
check out Freebert on Netflix. Watch all his specials. Go see him live on the road. It's, I don't know.
To Party World Tour, when's this come out? Next week?
Yeah, we're in the next 2 weeks. Yeah, Tampa, one, there's one and then another one.
Tampa, Duluth.
When are you in Tampa?
I'm in Tampa next the 30th of January.
Okay, I'm there. I'm doing the Tampa Theater February 14th.
Oh, for real?
I'm very excited.
Oh, the famous. That's one. That's the best place in Tampa.
It's Tampa Theater.
That's where the last time I did. This is how fucking quick everything happened with Shane. The last time I did the arena I'm doing this year,
yeah.
Shane was at the Tampa Theater, and he'd done two. Yeah. And he was like,
I'm doing one, and please sell those out.
He goes, can I come over and hang out? And I was like, yeah. And he came over. I think he was with McKeever.
Yeah.
I think he was. And he was like, we were hanging out in the tour bus just drinking. And he was like, dude, I was like, you're going to be in this arena soon. And he was like, oh, right.
He's at the Garden.
I think he's
He's at MSG. This weekend.
Jesus Christ. I wish I was here for that. I'm in Austin this weekend.
It's going to be very fun, but you get a little, I want my friend. So he's like hanging out with like Seal. And I'm like, hey, I want to talk to Shane. Get out of here, Seal.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. I'm sure that I'd be like, that it would be weird if I was like, hey, Shane, I'm working with you. He's like, so good, Bert. Hope your green room's good. And then he leaves. And you're
no,
like,
he's the man. I took a walk with him around at an arena and I was like, dude, And it's very similar to you. You haven't changed since I knew you, since you were doing, you know what? You're the same exact guy where we hung out and had lunch in Calgary.
In Calgary.
When you were doing Yuck Yucks and I was doing the Laugh Shop. And then I came and hung out and I saw it. I saw it with my own eyes. I was like, Bert's about to be fucking giant. Oh. We went to a bar. You had the whole bar bought out. Everyone came from your show at Yuck Yucks. You got me a non-alcoholic beer because you went, all you need is a non-alcoholic beer. You'll be able to hang for like 2 hours. And I went, Bert, I have a very low time in bars. You got me such a good non-alcoholic bar.
I actually remember
that. I went to the bartender and I went, did you give me a real beer? And he went, no. And he had to show me the non-alcoholic. It was Klauster, I think. Claude Hoster. I'm probably saying the name wrong. And then I went, I want two more of those.
Do you remember this night someone gave me a snowboard and the owner of the club asked if he could keep it?
Yes. That was at Yuck Yucks. Was at Yuck Yucks at Calgary.
He goes, hey man, I just want you to know that they've given you this snowboard. And I was like, cool. And he was like, but I figure it's going to be hard for you to travel with.
Yes. That was after we had lunch.
Can I keep it? And I went,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then I went.
Because at lunch, because you go, should I have let him keep it? And I go, I don't know. It's a weird thing. You know what my response, I remember we were having barbecue.
We got so much barbecue.
I didn't know
what a dinosaur rib was. Yeah.
We got so much barbecue. And I remember the thing to you to make you feel better is I go, shipping and handling on that too much. And you go, right?
Right.
And then we both were like, but he shouldn't have asked for it.
He shouldn't have asked for it.
That was fucking wild. You're the man. I love you, brother. Bert.